Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 459. My name's James Gilmore, and returning to the fold is Emily Soden.
What's up, people of the internet?
Apparently it's a one-in, one-out policy here, because Rick is not joining us. He saw you coming and legged it, because he's intimidated.
This is just the revolving door of journalists.
Yeah, exactly. High turnover in this place. Literally every week we just get rid of him. So we'll look forward to welcoming our new intern next week, who will probably sound suspiciously like Rick, but I will just treat him as if he is an inferior. So exactly like
I must
Rick,
say
then.
Exactly like
he's not here and he can't defend himself. The bravest of the personal attacks. Hope you guys listening are all well and that you recovered from the massive Gamesmageddon that dropped onto your app stores last week. So there's a little bit of fallout from that. Emily, you've been catching up with some games from last week, haven't you?
Oh, yeah. No, I had absolutely the wrong weekend to take off in terms of game releases.
Yeah, I had something similar where I was supposed to be off Friday. But I did the podcast on Thursday, so you still got a podcast. It's because I love you people listening. Except for you, you suck. Now, I had to, therefore, try and cram everything into the 4 days of the week. We got most of it done, but there's been some rollover this week. Go and check out AppSpy's YouTube channel, which is now Pocket Gamer's YouTube channel. It's called Pocket Gamer at the top in blue on the masthead. We've had comments all week going, hang on, I didn't subscribe to this. But it's very simple, really. We have just rebranded the AppSpy YouTube channel to be Pocket Gamer because it kind of always has been Pocket Gamer since I've taken over. It was originally another channel called AppSpy, but it's always been the video arm of PG. And now we've just put the proper label on it. It's got the right colours, and it's going to go and coincide with some exciting things that happen on Pocket Gamer itself in the next week or two. Really keep your eyes on the site. Something big is coming for you. That sounded ominous, didn't it?
It did. It's like the storms batter down the hatches. It's all coming in.
Yeah. No, it's a good. It's a nice storm. It's one of those ones where you get struck by lightning, but you'll feel all invigorated and fizzy afterwards.
Well, a bit like Wizard of Oz when she nips off to... What is that place actually called? Oh, Oz. Oh, for fuck's sake.
It's the afternoon already. It's not even the really early morning.
No,
where I might forgive that kind of mental hiccup.
It feels like it's been a good long while since I've had a brain fart.
Lucky you. So I've had several this morning already. But I'll be honest with you all, I'm a little bit weary today. I don't know what it is. I feel a little bit exhausted before I've even started. But don't worry, pep is on the way because we've got news about Dragalia Lost and its success so far on the App Store. We've got an update from Asphalt 9 Legends. We've got very exciting news about the Nintendo Switch and a potential new version of that console, which may be on the horizon. Plus, news about The Room wobbling over there onto Nintendo's App Stores. Then a whole load of new releases, including Sid Meier's Civilization VI, the full entire game, finally landing on iPhone. We've got a review of Super Mario Party. We've got Monkey Nauts, stick your monkeys together and do weird stuff with them. We've got Piffle. We've got Animus Harbinger, which is definitely not trying to be Dark Souls, except it really, really is. Super Cat Tales 2, which is our featured review of the week, and more. But first, the news. Last week, you'll remember, we had Nintendo's first ever original IP for mobile arrive, which was called Dragalia Lost, and is an action RPG with a lot of gacha thrown in. Now, there have already been analyses done to its weekend launch, and it's earned a cool $3 million in the first weekend of launch, which is nothing to sniff at. Some people have pointed out, though, that it's maybe not quite as good as previous releases. So I think it's Fire Emblem Heroes that also earned an insane amount of money just in its first day.
Yeah, no, it was entirely nuts when Fire Emblem Heroes launched. But then it was a completely different game with a properly existing franchise as well.
Yeah, that is a difference. You've got all the fans and that brand awareness, which is what people go, what, Fire Emblem? I'll play that. Whereas this was just nothing, and you didn't even know it was Nintendo necessarily until you looked at the developer. But to put it in comparison, Fire Emblem Heroes earned like $2.9 million in its first day versus this, which is $3 million in its first weekend. So, you know, essentially half as successful. Plus, we should point out that Dragalia Lost is only available in a few territories right now. It hasn't gone worldwide, so it's not really a fair one-to-one comparison. Has it actually come out in the UK yet, Dragalia?
Honest to God, I don't know. Because it was weird. When they first launched it, it was supposed to be in about 6 territories or something, but it came up worldwide on the App Store. But then it wasn't worldwide.
As in you could see it. If you were in the UK, you could like view it, but you couldn't actually download it.
Yeah, something like that. I'll have a look in the Google Play Store at the moment, actually.
Well, we did review it. Don't think the review was ready as of the podcast last week. But Jessica, who is our US correspondent, reviewed it and gave it a 7, saying that it's sort of good, solid stuff. It's very, very gacha, which is perhaps a bit of a shame. Mm. But, you know, they're obviously trying something different again with this, different from Mario, different from Fire Emblem and all the rest of them. And so far, it's proved successful by any standard. 3 million in 2 days is pretty good from a few territories, but obviously this is Nintendo, so that's small change to them. 800,000 times it's been downloaded across Android and iOS, and I'm sure that number will jump massively when it goes properly global. So, sticking with the mobile news, Asphalt 9 Legends has got its first proper big update. So, if you're still playing this one, there's a club race mode now where you can create your own private races. But importantly, if you're a petrolhead, then you're interested in the cars. That's what you're here for. So, Lotus Elise Sprint 220 is available, and the Ferrari J50. And knowing as much as I do about cars, I'm going to say that they both have some wheels, 4 of them each. And there's probably a steering one as well. And I suspect there's an engine in both.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I was going to make the same joke, and I was like, yeah, okay, we're on the same page. This is okay.
No, this is not the Top Gear podcast, I'm afraid. I'm not a big motorhead, so who knows. So, Nintendo Switch. It's been popular, but it's maybe not quite as popular as it used to be. By which I mean, sales, I think, are starting to take a bit of a downturn. This is nothing weird or unusual, especially in the light of the fact that it has been ludicrously successful to start off with. So you're bound to see a little bit of a dip once the core audience has already snapped up their Switch. How do you address this dip? Well, you do what Nintendo's always done with its mobile consoles, which is release a new version. And it seems that potentially a new version of the Nintendo Switch is hovering just behind the horizon, just a little bit, waiting to pop over and then rob you of another £300 or so. There's a report in the Wall Street Journal. This is where the rumour came from. Apparently, the hardware update is maybe appearing sometime at the end of next year or the second half of next year, but it doesn't actually have any information about what that might be. I think there's one thing regarding the screen, isn't there?
Yeah. It's suggested that Nintendo will be taking a whack at the screen and, like, making it a bit more high-quality in LCD.
Right. High-quality LCD screen. Because, I mean, I presume it's LCD at the minute. They're not talking about updating it to an OLED or anything, which would be the real serious upgrade, like they did. I think they did that in reverse with the Vita.
Mm.
Remember, the original one had that lovely OLED screen, and then they did a new model where it had just a normal LCD, and it was a bit of a downgrade all round.
Just a complete disappointment. Yeah, I'm very, very good with a lot of stuff, and I'm very bad with a lot of stuff, and I always get LCD and LED mixed up.
Okay, well, LED's the ones where, like the OLED screen, that's where each pixel emits its own light, whereas LCD is just a liquid crystal display panel, and then you put lights behind it to kind of shine through. And this is all very boring for anyone who isn't screen tech nerded, but I'm well into all this stuff because I am that guy and I want to know about contrast ratios and stuff because this is my life. But that's the only small piece of information we've got. Question is, as a long-time Switch user and a self-declared fan, like big fan, where you've said before that it's overtaken other consoles you own.
Oh yeah, I'm still so mad at myself for how much I love this stupid device.
What, you weren't expecting it to dominate over your PC?
No. The first 2 weeks when I bought it, because I got it because I thought I'd be able to use it for work, for reviews and things. Obviously, I did. Mm. And it was like the big thing at the time. So I was like, right, well, you know, you can use the news and the thingies. I'm going to get this strictly for work. And if I don't like it, I can always send it back. I got it. I unwrapped it. I kept the boxes. I've still got the boxes, actually. Because I was fully prepared to be sending it back to the shop, like in a couple of weeks when I didn't use it. And the first game I played was obviously Legend of Zelda. and I played it for about an hour or something, and I was trying so hard. I kept texting my friend, trying to pick apart the thing. He's like, oh, I'm not too mad in the graphics. And then I cooked for the first time, and I went, no.
That's what it took. And then you got Stardew Valley.
And then I got Stardew Valley. And then there's like, you know, Golf Story and just so many games. I genuinely don't even think I own, aside from Steam, from all of my Steam sales, which I probably have never and will never play.
Mm.
I don't think I own a catalogue of games like this. The stupid thing is, the reason I love it so much is it's the ease of use.
Mm-hmm.
Like the fact that you can pick it up and it's hand size and you can play it, or you can dock it and you don't have to, this sounds really weird, but you don't have to turn it on and wait for things to boot up.
Yeah, no, the instant start is a massive perk. Like, I've always been someone who tries to conserve energy, again, because I'm that nerd, so I don't put things in standby mode, I try and switch them off and all that business. However, when the consoles have the sleep modes, like the fact the PlayStation has a sleep mode and the Xbox One doesn't, that to me is a massive gulf of difference in terms of like usability. So if I'm in the middle of play of something on the PlayStation, I can just go and sleep and just turn it down mid-fight. Mm. And then I can come back to it, turn it on, and it'll just fire up and you'll be back mid-fight as if the game is, you know, paused. The Xbox One S doesn't have that. You can keep it in a sort of an idle mode, but you can't just stop game mid-play. And that's a massive difference. And that's the kind of thing that, like, those automatic startup tablets. It's such a massive benefit to have that just pick up where you left off, no startup time. Does the Switch have that? As in, you can just sleep it mid-game and then turn it on again, and it'll be back where you started. Where you were, rather.
Yeah, literally, when you know, if you're playing a level or something, you need to catch a train, or in your coffee shop and your coffee gets, you know, cold or whatever.
Yeah.
You just press the home button, it, like, shoots you back out to the main menu and you can sleep.
Yeah, brilliant.
And then when you turn it back on, you just press the game and you're already back in the action. Like, you don't need to pause it or anything. It just puts the game, like, at rest for a sec.
Such a simple thing, and it's the most convenient thing in the entire world. So, with all that in mind, you being a self-declared fan, what I want to know is, having used it for hours and hours and hours, what would you change? What would you like to see Nintendo do if they're going to release a Nintendo Switch, you know, 2.0 or 1.5?
My major issue with it is the comfort.
Okay.
Which, it's not easy to explain if you haven't held one of these, and maybe I hold them wrong or something, but...
I have groped one. I've played on one for a bit.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because it's so comfortable until you get past a point, and then your hand, like down in the base palm of your hand, like down the bottom,
mm-hmm.
is where I start to cramp.
Okay.
Because the Joy-Cons are completely straight, or like they've got their little bumper bits at the top, but they don't do anything. The majority of it is straight and it doesn't fit properly.
Right, it's not kind of curved and ergonomic like the way an Xbox or PlayStation controller is. It doesn't, for your hand to wrap around, it is still effectively a big rectangle with slightly softened edges.
Yeah, exactly. And the funny thing is, like, when I'm at home, again, same with when I actually bought the Switch, I brought the Pro Controller,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, a fair bit of money, because I was like, right, well, I'll see how it goes, and then I can always sell it. If I'm at home and my Switch is docked, I will always play with my Pro Controller.
Right.
Because you can, it's one of the most comfortable controllers I've ever used in my life.
Mm-hmm.
When you're on the go and stuff, it still works perfectly fine and it's still perfectly comfortable to use the Joy-Cons.
Yeah.
But I find using the right analog stick kind of slightly lower down and the buttons, I sweep my right pinky underneath, like the bottom of the screen.
Oh, yeah.
So I like curve it inwards like a little shelf
mm-hmm.
to make sure that it doesn't move while I play it.
It sounds like when I play the Vita and you have to, it has that touch-sensitive back screen. Mm. So you spend a lot of time stroking the back of the control, the back of the console. All right, so comfort-wise, you'd like tweaks. So you're thinking like maybe redesign the Joy-Cons or add something where it will fit your hand a little bit better?
Yeah, because you can get cases and things, but like, you know, the whole point is that you can detach the Joy-Cons and play with them separately and stuff. Funny enough, when you play with the Joy-Cons detached from the console, they're a lot more comfortable. Because you don't have the weight of the main console on them.
That's true.
I mean, it's not as comfortable if you're playing like one Joy-Con each with your massive hands and Mario Kart. Mm. But it's one of the main things I notice with it. And the fact that the connections where the Joy-Cons go onto the main thingy are a little tiny bit flimsy.
That's what I was worried about when the console was originally announced. I thought that could be a real sticking point. Because if you can click them in and click them out, and you're constantly doing that all the time, what happens when those clicks start to get less secure and it ends up being a little bit wobbly and creaky? It sounds like they've actually been pretty good. Like, I haven't heard a massive wave of people going, oh, I can't even, it won't even click in anymore. It's all, but you know, that's what I was expecting, in the same way that those Xboxes all red lighted in the first wave.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to be like, no, they won't even, all the Switch controllers have broken off and they have to redesign it. That didn't happen. It seems to be they've done pretty well, though you're saying, you know, perhaps there's a little bit of play after a while.
Only a tiny bit, though. Considering, like, you know, I bought mine last April. I use it at least once a day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, clicking on, clicking off, you know, a few times a week or whatever, however I like to do it. And mine are still completely rock solid.
Okay, so maybe tweaking the comfort of the Joy-Cons, maybe make them a bit more secure. Anything else you would like to see changed or improved?
When it was announced that it'd be about 2.5 to 3 hours battery life if you're playing, you know, a graphic intense game on the go. But I mean, I take, my Switch is kind of my savior when I go on train journeys or travel home or on the bus somewhere or whatever. Mm. And I play it from the train station, you know, to when I get to my parents' house or, you know, if I'm visiting or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it lasts a long time. My journey back to my parents, if I'm visiting, is about 2.5 hours-ish. And from fully charged to there, I still have about 56%.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's, say, 2 hours if you're playing maybe like Breath of the Wild, something seriously intensive.
Do you know what? Even that, like Breath of the Wild, is still a very, very good lasting game. If it was Doom or something, you're playing at high graphics, brightness mm-hmm. right up, all of that sort of stuff, you may find it to be a little bit iffy. Plus, you can hear when it starts to get hot because it blows the air out of the top little filter.
Oh, really? The fan starts working hard.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what I'm interested to see is whether they follow any of the patterns that they used to use on the DS and the 3DS, because what they started off by doing is they released the main console, then they tend to do like a light version or a slim version of the console. So you've got like the, you know, the DS Lite to make it a little bit smaller. And then they go the other way and they make a massive one. They do an XL. That tends to be, and then they make it 3D. So I'm pretty sure they're not going to make this 3D at any point, because that was the dead end that a lot of us predicted it would be. But it's a question is whether they go slimmer, because it's already big enough. I can't see them doing a bigger version, because at that point, it's just like an iPad Pro, you know, those super massive iPads. That might be a bit much, and it'd be heavy as hell with controllers and everything. But I'm thinking maybe they might try and slimline it a little bit if they can, like make it a little bit thinner, more iPad-y, tablet-y.
Yeah, I can definitely see them like trying to slimline it.
Mm. But then the controllers would have to either be A, really slim as well, which might make them more uncomfortable because you're holding a big credit card at that point and that's going to stick in your hands. Or they have to have the controllers thick and then the screen thin and it might look a bit weird.
Mm. Well, plus then your connective points will be even more under strain.
Yeah, that's true. Well, it's all speculation. We're very interested to see what they come out with when they release it. I'm sure they will. It's inevitable now. All consoles, whatever they are, have numerous iterations at this point. So we look forward to the Nintendo Switch Slim or whatever it is they come up with. Sticking with Switch just briefly before we go, The Room is coming to Nintendo Switch. This is actually backed by Team 17 as well as Fireproof Games. So they're the ones, I think, who are involved with porting it on over to the Switch. My big question with this is, what are they doing about the controls? Because that is what this game is all about. The series is all about the touchy-touchy tactile stuff.
Mm.
But it seems they're supporting both. Is that right?
You can use your Joy-Cons or your Pro Controller just as you would, and it's also supporting motion control and, I assume, HD Rumble.
So there is good room here, I think. Oh, God, I said room. Here, for motion control stuff. So there is something that I can see here where you kind of reach out with the motion controls and then squeeze a button and then pull your hand back and it twists the camera around. Like, it turns it into more, almost like a VR game. Where you can use the Joy-Cons, like, you know, reach out and grab and pull a drawer open and then twist a thing. And if you're doing that with your hands, that would actually be a really good interpretation of The Room as a game, because it's all about those physical tactile controls where you feel like you're reaching through the screen. If you're using actual thumbsticks to just move the camera around, I'm not into that. That seems like a backward step. Mm. So if you go into full, like, hand wavy around grabby mode, I'm all for that, and I would quite like to play it. And of course, there's a whole series of the games now, so if it does well, it opens the door for all the sequels too. But October the 18th is the due date for that, so 2 weeks or so, you'll be able to get your hands on The Room on your Switch. You lucky people, go get involved. out and about this week. No interviews, you may have noticed this week, but we'll be doubling down next week on a biggie, possibly maybe another one as well, so stay tuned for that. But there's lots to cover, so let's talk about, I suppose, one of the big releases on mobile. Civ 6 done landed on iPhone. This is sort of old news, but also new, because it came to iPad, I think, earlier this year, or maybe even last year.
I think it was last year.
Yeah. So there's been a tablet version of this around for a while, but it wasn't available on iPhone. So, like, there's no way we can put it onto a little tiny iPhone screen. So they just stuck with iPad. Turns out there is totally a way to fit it onto an iPhone, and they've only gone and done it. And it's gone live as of yesterday, 2 days ago. And it works quite well. I'm not a Civ player. I say this in the video, but there is a video of it up on the Pocket Gamer YouTube channel. But even with my lack of knowledge, it was just a case of diving in, testing it, seeing if it works, seeing if there was loads of lag, and if the text was discernible. Because you're taking a massive game with an incredible number of menus and a lot of text, and then smushing it down onto this tiny screen. They've done a very good job with optimizing it. There are a few issues that I have, which is, it's a hex-based game, which you know if you've played it, and if you want to move, for example, your warriors and send them over the map, you know, 7 hexes over, let's say, you would click and then you would drag. When you're using a touchscreen, obviously you put your finger on them and then you drag. And then when you're on an iPhone and all these little tiny hexes are there, when you put your finger on a hex, you can't see anymore whether you've selected it, whether you haven't selected it, and you drag your finger around and you sort of hope that you're dragging it to the right place. So you have to do a lot of zooming in and then zooming out. So if you want to move people around, zoom right in so the hexes are as big as they can possibly be. Then you can kind of see what you're doing. Your finger doesn't completely smother the interface. Mm. And then you then quickly zoom back out again to see the overview of the map, which you probably do in the real game as well. But that's the only way you can really sort of command your territory properly on mobile. It's not as bad on iPad, because I did give the iPad a go, just because the screen is that much bigger. So from the kickoff, the hexes present a little bit bigger and you don't have that same problem. The other thing is that it runs incredibly hot because it's a big game with a lot going on in it. And so the game has put an actual battery indicator. It's like copied the battery indicator from the phone and put it in the top right of the screen so that you can always see your battery, because it'll swallow it up in moments. And you need to be made aware of it. And it's the only game I've seen which actually puts its own battery indicator in, because, like, it just works the processor so hard. Because it's Civ 6, you know? It's a massive bloody thing, and it's got a lot going on. So that's something to be wary of. But apart from that, it all works surprisingly well. And I tried it out on a lower-end device. I tried it on an iPhone 6S. Still worked. Wasn't laggy or chuggy or anything. I was very surprised. The thing that might put people off, A, it's an older version of Civ, so it's from like 2-3 years ago, but B, it is £22 at the moment, and that's on sale from its usual asking price of around 50 or 60, which is what it's listed as. Now, I've never seen it on the App Store before this point, so I've never seen it with the £60 or the $60 label next to it, but I'm informed that £22 is a 60% off launch sale. And it's currently $22.99, so the math says it's going to be $60 in a couple of weeks. I think the sale finishes on October the 12th. If so, that's up there with the most expensive iOS game I've ever seen.
After we kind of had that big debate about Monster Hunter Stories last week, it's quite a it's quite a step.
It is, but I wouldn't be sad to see these kind of games do well. Monster Hunter Stories is, I think, $19.99, that one. And then you got Layton, which is £10, and others which launched, which were £15. And like, I like big premium games coming to iOS, but it's only a select few developers and franchises which can kind of ask that price, and now people go, yeah, go on then. As we always say, Square Enix and Final Fantasy, and in this case, like, Civ is such a big thing that they thought, yeah, screw it. Like, if people are really into Civ, they will pay the 20 or even pay the 50 or the 60. I'll wait and see. I'm going to keep checking back in, because I just want to see what it looks like. I want to see £60 on the App Store listings, just because it's a new experience. But if you want to give it a go, it is free to play for the first 60 turns. That's the way they give you an in. First taste is free, and then you'll get right to an interesting point in your first campaign, and then it'll lock you out and demand you pay a load of money. So bear that in mind. But you can try it, see for yourself. It genuinely does work. Now, the other big release of the week, I guess, is Super Cat Tales 2. Following hot on the heels of the original Super Cat Tales. I can't remember if the first one was premium or not. This one's free to play, but it's just ad support. So it's not too obnoxious. The ads kick in every now and then, but it is still a old school 16-bit style retro platformer in which you take control of not one, but a series of cats, all of which have different skills, and you traverse a bunch of horizontally scrolling levels because you're trying to defeat this robot dude and his tin man robot enemies. It's a very stripped back, streamlined game. Did you play either this one or the original? Did you ever see the first one when it came out?
I think I did dabble in the first one a little bit, but for the life of me, I can't remember it aside from the fact it's got cats in it.
The way that it works is it doesn't have a jump button or a punch button or anything like that. It's just got left and right, either side of the screen. And the idea is you do every control using those streamlined two-button systems. So you just press right to walk right, you double tap to run. If you want to jump, you need to double tap, run, and then when you hit the edge of a platform, you'll automatically jump. Likewise, if you want to bash an enemy, if you're one of the harder cats which can actually smash through objects and people, you double tap and you charge run through it. That's kind of it. So it factors wall running in. One of the cats can run up walls really well. And the idea is as you meet these sort of skilled cats, they become part of your party, and you can switch between them on the fly just by tapping a little icon in the top left. So you need different cats for different tasks. It's very sweet. It's quite cleverly designed in terms of the levels because you have to collect 3 cat bells on each level, and then eventually some levels will be gated, so you need to go back and make sure you've got all the bells you need to unlock the boss level or something like that. So you need to revisit levels you've already completed with new cats that you have since unlocked, and then use their skills. So there's an aquatic cat, for example, who can swim against the current. And there are bits in earlier levels where you just can't access certain areas. So you need to go back, revisit them with your new skilled cat, and then get the extra bells you couldn't get before. So there's some quite good, say, almost Metroidish stuff where you're, you know, you're Castlevania revisiting old levels with new skills. But they're all little bite-sized chunk levels, and the overworld looks a lot like it does in Super Mario World. And it's very cute. It's very charming. I like the streamlined controls. It is completely free to play with ads kind of at the end of levels. Not to the point where it gets super obnoxious, but you can pay, I think, $3.99 to unlock the full game. I like it. I think it's fun and silly and daft, and has got some nice moments where you jump into vehicles and start blasting your way through big doors. That's fun. You get a real power trip when you jump into those. The thing that is a slight drawback, I think, is because you need to switch between the characters on the fly a bunch, it kind of ruins the flow when you have to keep stopping, change character, take a couple of steps forward, jump a thing, then stop, change to the other character that can run up the wall, then stop, change to the character that can smash through things. So it's a little bit stoppy-starty with that character change mechanic. And it's not just one button where you just hit Y and it goes whoop and switches between characters. You have to sort of press the button, the menu appears, choose a cat, and then it goes away. So it really does pause the game for a second or two. But that's kind of nitpicky. 100 levels, it is good fun. A lot of gloss. I think the first one did pretty well. So I'd recommend going and playing it if you like your fun, light platformers on touchscreen. Now, Em, we covered a bunch of the games that came out last week, but you've been playing... I know you've been playing some Monster Hunter Stories for reviews on 148, but you've played a lot more Layton than I did. I played the first maybe like 10, 15 puzzles. You've been playing it for a proper review. How have you found it? Is this your first Layton experience, or are you familiar with the franchise already?
No, funny enough, because I didn't really have a DS or, you know, any kind of access to it. The first Layton game I played was Layton's Mystery Journey last year.
The one that came out on tablets and that?
Yeah. Obviously gave it a go because I loved it. And this one, I know it's the first in the series and it is my first time with it. I just instantly loved it from the second it started.
Oh, did you? Okay, cool.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
I got to the point where I was just gotten into the mansion, just gotten into the guy, the big guy's house who you're trying to meet. How does the difficulty ramp up and what's the narrative stuff like? Because I really only did what I would consider the prologue, get to the city and then talk to the man. That's where I stopped.
It's good. The difficulty is fairly consistent in that, you know, when you do some puzzles and you cannot figure it out and it's like, oh my God, this is the hardest thing ever. And then when you get the solution, it's like, oh, actually, I'm just an idiot.
Yes, they're all difficult unless you know it, and then they're really easy.
Yeah. The majority of the ones I've done so far have been a lot like that.
Okay.
But it's the way they word it. They're all very clever about it. And the narrative ramps up. There's a fluffy bit where you've got to go and catch a cat. But when you come back from catching said cat, that's when everything, when the real mystery really kicks off.
Okay.
But you know what I'm like with both puzzlers and narrative games, so it's not like I'm not going to enjoy it. Unless everything was terrible.
It is built for you, which is good.
Oh, that's it. It's basically like someone's made this game just for me.
Excellent. That's still available, £9.99 if you want to get it. But there is a hands-on up on the Pocket Gamer YouTube channel. Go and check that out. Now, you might have heard of a little game called Crossy Road, which was made by Hipster Whale. And mm-hmm. Hipster Whale have come back with Piffle, which is a game that is taking, I guess, two popular trends on mobile and the internet in general. One being Buster Move, Puzzle Bobble style, Bubble Witch Saga-esque, you know, firing stuff in the bottom of the screen to destroy blocks. And then mixing that with cats. And that's what it is. So it's a game where you take control of a character called Piffle, who's dressed up in a cat suit, and you then proceed to fire lots of little cats up the screen, which then bounce around, ricochet, destroy blocks, you collect more cats, you aim for little cats, and then that gets added to your arsenal of cats, your ammo, I suppose, because each cat counts as one ball that you launch into the air. So by the end of every level, you've gone from having like two or three cats that you fire in a row, to having like 20 of them flying about the place. And you need to aim for things like power-ups there. These are little electrical spheres that you get that turn your cat into electro bolts that whiz all over the screen. And it's really doing not a great deal new, this. It's very much just like, yep, you've played Puzzle Bobble or you've played Bubble Witch Saga. It's just cats and squares instead of, you know, bubbles and that. So it's their version of that. It's very, very slick. It's very, you know, charmingly done. And the cats go meow, meow, around the screen, which, you know, people will like that. But there's not a great deal to say about it, you know?
No, I found, because I gave it a quick go yesterday. I enjoyed it while I was playing it, but when I stopped, I kind of just passed out of my memory.
Yeah, you will go, oh, that's fine, that's perfectly distracting, put it down and then forget it ever existed. But, you know, I can't say anything bad about it, really, other than that it's just a bit forgettable. But it's fun. It's fun while it lasts. If you like these games, you need another one. You could do a lot worse. Piffle is the name of that. Then we've got Monkey Nauts, which is one of these things where I just don't get this stuff and other people do. So it is a clicker. And yes, a clicker with a couple of extra wrinkles, but I have notoriously a difficult time with clickers because I just don't see the point. I don't enjoy them. However, this one's got a slight twist. So you are a monkey scientist in a monkey scientist lab breeding or genetically engineering monkeys. So you create a little Vita chamber. One of them pops up in the corner of the screen, and then you need to tap it like 20 times. Tap, 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 tap. And then the Vita chamber bursts, and out of it comes a little tiny, like, infant monkey, a little infant monkey nappy. And then once you've got him, you need to birth another one. So there's another Vita chamber pops up, so you open that one. And when you've got two of the little baby monkeys, you sort of drag them together, and then boom, they become like a teenage monkey. And then you go through the whole process again, two more little baby ones, put them together to make a more teenage one. Then when you've got the two teenage ones, you then push those together and create like an adult monkey. And they've got personalities, and you create scientist monkey, and that's the way that it works. You're constantly combining and combining and combining layer upon layer. And they get more smart, they get more capable, and you earn cash, and which is always clicking up at the top of the screen and yada yada. Harry liked it. I don't get it. This is just boring to me. This is just a tedious, busy work, clickety click, click, click for no reason. But he sees it as a really decent evolution of the idle game, the games that almost play themselves, where you really don't have to think a great deal. So if you like that stuff, cool. If you're like me and you don't get what the point of a clicker is, then I don't think this is going to change your mind at all. But it's free to play, I believe, and Monkey Nauts is the name. Now, Super Mario Party Switch, obviously I haven't played it. Rick did the review. Might get him to talk about it in more detail when he comes back next time. I don't suppose you've got this or had a bang on it, or you've been busy elsewhere.
No, I definitely think you'll have to get Rick to talk you through, because I said to him to report back to me. I was like, I don't know whether to buy it or not, and so far the reviews so online have been like, eh.
Okie dokie. So it's It's similar to the other games. It's all the Mario characters on a big board playing a board game, and then you get mini games which pop up, which let you earn coins and that. So it's got the slightly, you know, WarioWare bit. There's a river survival game in four-player co-op, and then there's a sound stage with mini games, which are apparently a bit weak. He gave it a 7. He gave it a bronze award, saying that it's what you'd expect, and it's just light fun to play with people, but there's not a great deal of depth or anything. And some of the mini games, they repeat a lot, and he felt that it got a little bit tiresome. But that's just me relaying. I haven't played it. Good, clean fun, he thinks it is. But as I say, I might probe him a little bit more about it next week. One game I did spend a bunch of time on, though, is Animus Harbinger, which is actually a sequel.
Oh, yeah.
A sequel to Animus. I didn't play the first one. But this is the game that very, very much wants you to know that it wants to be Dark Souls, and it ain't hiding that from anybody. So it looks exactly like Dark Souls, the grimmer bits when you're wandering around in the forests. And it handles like Dark Souls in terms of the speed of the attack, sort of quite slow, deliberate, labored attacks and swings. Lots of very lengthy animations for doing stuff. There are flasks which you drink from in the way you would chug an Estus flask. Everyone's an undead villager or some weird abomination or something like that. The bosses are massive, gigantic bastards which stomp around 3 times the size of you and have huge energy bars. You feel massively underleveled. You have to upgrade each of your individual armor components and your weapons. It's just, it's Dark Souls through and through, only it's on a mobile with touchscreen controls, which presents the kind of problems you would imagine. Because, you know, Dark Souls is a lot more than just the combat. It's also the lore that the game is built around and that big world that kind of double backs on itself. And you don't get any of that here. So they're sort of shorter, bite-sized level chapter chunks where you just go in a straight line, kill a few grunts, and then come up against a bigger boss at the end of it. And that's pretty much it. It doesn't actually control terribly, given how bad it could be. And, you know, the animations and stuff like that, they're all quite nice. It does sort of, at times, you catch glimpses of like, okay, yeah, I can see what you're going for here, and I can see you've really gone for the Dark Souls thing. And I didn't have like an awful time playing it. But the problem is, when you're playing it going, you're sort of imitating one of the most beloved games of the last generation or two of consoles, you can't help but sit there going like, oh, this isn't Dark Souls, is it? And this is very much a touchscreen, and they've got too many buttons in the corner of the screen, and I don't, you know, this is far from ideal. It's also not the worst. So, as you can tell, I'm conflicted. Because I
really are, aren't you?
I like the Soulsborne games. I'm not super, like, mad geek knowledgeable about them. I'm not these kind of people who've completed them 50 times, but I like them, and I like Bloodborne, and I like Dark Souls, and I did get into them eventually, and I think they're really good and clever. And this doesn't have any of the smart environmental storytelling or the lore or anything, and it just, you know, there are worse copies of Dark Souls that I've seen, I suppose. It's not Kings of Fallen, whatever that one with Fallen is, which was trying to do Dark Souls, which was utter garbage. But, really? I'm not sure. So, you can get that. Hang on, is this premium? I need to double check whether this costs money.
I think it does. I think you get the first little bit free, and then you got to pay for it.
Yeah, that's it. You get the first, like, just the first fight or something for free, and then it's like a couple of bucks. £4.99, I think. $4.99. And, yeah, like, I don't think so. Do watch the video. There's a proper review of it up on the Pokémon YouTube channel. There is also, and I played it for like a couple of seconds, a Prince of Persia game came out. Prince of Persia Escape. It's an auto-runner version of Prince of Persia, which takes like the original style of the original games, makes them 3D and really ugly, and then puts an advert in almost every 5 seconds.
Good. Fun.
And it can absolutely do one. It's trash.
I wasn't expecting anything else, to be fair.
No. So don't even waste your time with this. I think it's just garbage, and greedy garbage at that. So, rubbish. Prince of Persia Escape. Escape from it, if you can. Finally, there is a game called Four Pillars. Now, I haven't really spent anywhere near enough time to deal with this, which is kind of a 2.5D, I guess it's an action-adventure game. where you have to do platforming and a bit of combat and do a lot of exploration and avoid traps and bits and bobs. I've done like the first couple of levels. Gluey is the term I would use to describe the controls and the movement. It feels very slow, very languid. But maybe it's supposed to be that. I haven't played enough to judge this one. It's free to download. Four Pillars, all one word, but I think we'll, you know, cover it in a little bit more detail over on the website and on the YouTube channel. I think that's it. I think we've got it all in the bag there, Em.
Yeah, that sounds like a good old wrap today.
In which case, do all of the things you've heard me say a million times with subscribing and liking, and why not go and subscribe to the new Pocket Gamer YouTube channel? It is nice and good, and it looks all swish, and we've got lots of good content coming up, and already good content on there. Give it a peek. And keep your eyes on pocketgamer.co.uk, specifically the next week or two, because we're not lying when we say big things are going to happen. So, yeah, it's a little teaser for you, but it's good stuff. Good stuff on the way. In the meantime, have a good weekend. Go play lovely games, and we'll join you next week for more. Until then,